It's now my pleasure then to invite Brother Jeff forward to give us the words of exhortation.
Good morning. Ooh, I like to hear the good mornings. This morning, I hate to disappoint you, but I'm not going to speak about elephants. Unfortunately, we are going to talk about patience and trust, and I couldn't quite figure out how to work elephants into that. For those who missed the reference, my last exhortation was about elephants. Come talk to me after if you're wondering and you're curious, but this morning we're going to talk about patience and trust, and I do have a little story to start with, and it has to do with why I have two pairs of glasses here. I'm not quite sure which ones to wear, because when I look out at you, I can see you great with these ones, but I can't see my page very well. These help a lot, and I'm quite surprised, but eventually, seven months, I guess, because it was November when I had my eyes first checked, and now where are we in August? August, yeah, but I got these in July, so 7 months. But I also had two different pairs of lenses in these glasses before we kind of arrived at the right prescription to see you out there, but not to see my page. And they also tried putting a little boost, let's call it, in these ones. I couldn't focus through the day at all. And I'm going to move this microphone around. So now I don't know what to do. Maybe I should just not wear anything. So what does that have to do with patience? Well, I you can probably guess after about 7 months of trying different lenses and then waiting for a month or a few weeks, and then you get a migraine and you think, oh, well, that's not working very well, so I better call and, you know, go through this again. And, okay, well, the next thing we can do is ABC. I will change your prescription again. We'll make a little lower and maybe your eyes will be okay then. Apparently my muscles are overworked and they don't like adjusting the lenses. So I have a reduced prescription to see about that distance. So month after month, we try it out for a while, and if I'm still getting headaches and it's still not quite working out, I call again. And well, It's maybe not the most challenging circumstance in life. There are a lot more challenging circumstances. A lot of other very dangerous or painful circumstances that people go through. But it's one that can still try your patience. You can get kind of impatient when you just can't see properly anymore. And you know that there's got to be a solution. And why can't we get to it quickly? So month after month, we have to endure patiently. And what helped me through this very trying circumstance? And I say that a little bit tongue-in-cheek, because it's not the most horrible thing to go through, is trust. Because I trusted that the professionals on the other end of this understood what was going on, and eventually they would come up with the right combination of lenses and whatever it took. They understood how the eye worked. They said, your eyes are healthy, well, but they still can't focus. But I trusted that they would find the solution eventually. And now I think we have one that works, sort of, for now, until my eyes change again. And then I'll be a challenge for them again and show up every month asking for a new pair. But that's the point. I had patience because I trusted that they would get to the solution. Now, perhaps there were moments that I wasn't so patient. Maybe the day that I got a migraine, I was thinking, oh, why can't they just fix this? But after that, it passed, and I phoned and talked to them nicely. They had my best interest at heart. Now, I consider myself to be, or have considered myself to be, a fairly patient guy. Maybe some of that patience comes from just simply being unobservant of certain behaviors and things that go on. I miss a lot of things, I'm told. So I just go with the flow. And when we think we have something cased and all figured out, maybe that's when God sends us a test, a trial, to test that strength that we think we have. And then we realize, well, maybe I don't have it cased after all. Maybe I haven't completely figured out patience. I haven't completely figured out kindness. I haven't completely figured out love. Maybe there's some room to grow after all. And I think of all the patience testing circumstances that I've experienced. I'll try not to do that too much. I think I've got it mostly memorized. Just think about the patience testing circumstances that you've been through, that you've experienced, maybe with a coworker or your boss, with education, with learning, with school, with teachers, instructors, creating, cleaning. Maybe you don't have patience for cleaning. teaching, helping, advising, listening is a big part of that, and it's tough to be patient and just listen and realize that we don't have to have a solution right away. Driving, that takes patience. At grocery shopping, when you're standing in line and you really need to get somewhere, but there's five people in front of you and they're all fiddling with their coins because they're not paying with a credit card today. You know, we usually avoid circumstances that could be difficult, that might require a little too much patience for us. Just think of the thing that maybe provokes you the most or pushes your buttons, the thing that your brother or sister did to you. Patience is needed. You know, let's go to Jeremiah, because if we're going to talk about patience, I think Jeremiah fits the bill. We're going to actually touch on each of the readings this morning. Jeremiah would have had to been very patient throughout the years of his activities serving as a prophet of God, and starts with the people. We have this fellow Ishmael. We have Gedaliah, and Gedaliah was put in charge some kind of a ruler, not a king. Governor, thank you. Someone said the word governor. I think that was Mom. See the smile there. Gedaliah was put in as a governor. So Ishmael comes along and he's warned, Gedaliah is warned by Johanan that I think this guy is going to come and take you out. You better take him out first. And Gedaliah, for whatever reason, must have trusted Ishmael. He had been one of the king's officers. He was of royal blood, so maybe there was something there before. I don't know. Why are Johanan? So Ishmael fled from Johanan, who was one of those who advised, along with the others, that Gedaliah to serve the Babylonians. But In chapter 41, verse 18, we see the other side of Johanan, linked to what we read today about Johanan. In 41, verse 18, I don't even need glasses. I can just hold it right here. To escape the Babylonian, and they went on, stopping at Gurath-Kimham near Bethlehem on their way to Egypt to escape the Babylonians. They were afraid of them because Ishmael, son of Nethaniah, had killed Gedaliah, son of Ahikam, whom the king of Babylon had appointed as governor over the land. So now they're afraid. But what had they said, before? Well, we'll get to that in a moment. Just following the story through, Johanan warned Gedaliah. Gedaliah didn't listen. Gedaliah was taken out by Ishmael. Ishmael took out a whole bunch of other people because he didn't want the Babylonians there. And then now we're reading in chapter 42 that the Babylonians are going to come back. And Jeremiah is saying, don't flee to Egypt. Stay, just like you did with Gedaliah, and things will be okay. But then we know in chapter 43, they don't. So that's the story. In 42 that we read today, verse 6, it talks about Johanan and those who are with him that were apparently wise. They learned that God was in control, which must have been. So we're thinking about patience in Jeremiah, for Jeremiah, an encouragement, because in verse 6, we read, whether it is favorable or unfavorable, we will obey the Lord our God to whom we are sending you. So they had just asked Jeremiah, please go to God for us and ask him what we should do. You know, I think they should have already known what they should have done, because Jeremiah has been prophesying all along that they need to stay and not go to Egypt. But here they're asking, and they say, we're open to hear what God says. We will do everything the Lord your God sends you to tell us, whether it is favorable or unfavorable, subjective, right, for them. We will obey the Lord our God, to whom we are sending you, that it go well with us, for we will obey the Lord our God. So that's what they declared. But Jeremiah, of course, had told them Judah would fall to the Babylonians. It would be under rule of Babylonians, and how they were treated depended on what they did and their decision to follow or not to follow. So we have verses 1 to 3, where all the officers, including Johanan, son of Korea, all came to Jeremiah and asked, please, hear our petition. Pray to the Lord your God for this entire remnant. We were many, but now we're only a few. Pray to the Lord your God that he will tell us where we should go and what we should do. And Jeremiah says, I have heard. I will do it. And I will keep nothing back. So finally, maybe Jeremiah is thinking the people are listening. I'm sure this is what Jeremiah hoped for. You know, that the people would finally ask God's advice and they would listen and they would have patience and courage and trust to accept the decision, to accept the word of God. So I'm sure he wanted to hear this. But he'd also had experience with the people. So maybe it doesn't surprise him what actually happens in the end. In verses 5 and 6, they seem very sincere and ready to wait on God's direction. And yet, they didn't take it as Jeremiah had hoped. The people had 10 days. That's what verse 7 tells us. 10 days later, the word of the Lord came. They had 10 days to decide. To reflect. Not to decide. To reflect and wait for God. 10 days to be patient, to trust that whatever God would say, that was what they should do. Think of something that you've been praying for. It might have been for many years. do we have that patience? This was just 10 days. Are we ready to accept the answer? So it happened after 10 days that the word of the Lord came to Jeremiah. And we have this reiteration of the foundation of trust that has to be there for them to have the patience to endure. Because it says here in verse 8, so he called together Johanan, sorry, not verse 8, yeah, I lost my place. In verse 9, he said to them, this is what the Lord, the God of Israel, to whom you sent me your petition, says. If you stay in the land, I will build you up, not tear you down. I will plant you, not uproot you, for I am grieved over the disaster I have inflicted on you. Do not be afraid of the king of Babylon, whom you now fear. Do not be afraid. In other words, trust in me. Do not be afraid of him, declares the Lord, for I am with you. And I will save you and deliver you from his hands. I will show compassion so that he will have compassion on you and restore you to your land. So trust in me, and I will be patient with you. If you can have the patient endurance to trust. Despite the arrival of the king of Babylon, there was a hope. But if not, then we read verses 13 to 17 and then 18 to 22, again, two sets of warnings. If you say, we will not stay in this land and so disobey the Lord your God, and if you say, no, we will live in Egypt, where, of course, they think there's not going to be any war, there's going to be no problems there. There'll be plenty, and they'll be provided for. But what will happen then? The sword then the sword you fear will overtake you there, and the famine you dread will follow you into Egypt, and there you will die. So there's not just warnings here. There is encouragement. We've read those verses of encouragement. And this is, in fact, if we go to chapter 40, and I remember I said I was going to bring this up, back to chapter 40 about good old verse 9, I think, about Johanan, the son of Kareah, and all of those folks with Gedaliah, before he's assassinated, it says, Gedaliah, son of Ahikam, son of Shaphan, took an oath to reassure them and their men. Do not be afraid to serve the Babylonians, he said. Settle down in the land and serve the king of Babylon. It will go well with you. I myself will stay at Mizpah to represent you before the Babylonians who come to us, but you are to harvest wine, summer fruit, oil, and put them in storage jars. Live in the towns that have been taken over. So they would be kept safe. So what happens? Johanan, son of Kareah, in verse 13, and all the army officers still in the open country came to Gedaliah at Mizpah and said to him, and this is where they talk about Ishmael that's going to come and take him. But they were all the ones that were with Gedaliah, including Ishmael in verse 8, son of Nethaniah, Johanan, and Jonathan, the sons of Kareah, who had said, don't be afraid. Because they knew and trusted in God. What changed? From verse 11 of chapter 40, where they say, do not fear the king of Babylon, of whom you are afraid. Do not fear him. And verse 12 that says, I will grant you mercy, that he may have mercy on you, let you remain in your own land. This is back in chapter 42. What changed for them? Johanan's advice at the first was in line with Jeremiah. Sometimes we have really good advice for others, and then we don't take it. Johanan didn't appear to the second time. It's kind of a do what I do, not what I say. But it's not very effective, is it? Have we already made up our minds on God's answer? Have we already decided, based on our circumstances and what we want to happen, how things should play out? There was reason to trust. Jeremiah's prophecies were being fulfilled. There was reason to listen to God because he was a God of mercy. And he would not see his remnant destroyed. And the people had already seen Jeremiah's predictions coming true. God's word being fulfilled. Assured of mercy if they would follow, something that he had always done for his people, something he does for each one of us. And the link, truth, acceptance, breeds patience. And in chapter 43, tomorrow's reading, we see that there was no patience and there was no trust of the people in God. Instead, there is pride and blame. Just look at verses 2 and 3 of this chapter 43. Azariah, son of Hoshiah, and Johanan, son of Kareah, and all the arrogant men said to Jeremiah, arrogant men, it notes in this version, said to Jeremiah, you are lying. The Lord your God has not sent you to say you must not go to Egypt to settle there. And now they have an excuse. But Baruch, son of Neriah, is inciting you against us to hand us over to the Babylonians so they may kill us or carry us into exile into Babylon. So there was pride, self-trust, and then, well, we'll just blame someone else. An excuse, a reason to reject God's direction. And Johanan and company do a whole 180 turn here in verse 6. And they not only don't go with God's direction, they take everyone with them. They also led away all the men, women, and children, and the king's daughters whom Nebuzaradan, commander of the imperial guard, had left with Gedaliah, son of Ahikam, etc. So they take all the people to Egypt, where before they were steady and encouraging to stay the course, to remain in the land, despite the fact that the Babylonians would take control. God had promised them that they would be well in their land. They did not have patience or endurance to see it through because they simply did not trust. They no longer trusted. And when we are challenged, when our patience is tried, what do we feel first? What's the first feeling that we have? Just think of a circumstance, and what's the first thing you feel? Well, I can tell you some things that I feel, and I can tell you what we read here about how these men felt. There was a self-justification welling up because they told Jeremiah, no, you're lying, we're right. God's wrong. Your words aren't from God. Self-justification and a self-justified anger. And a panic maybe that we're going to lose the control that we think we have. Both pride and panic are dissolved in trust. With trust in God, we remove self and we rely on Him. And we wait for His time and not our own. And it's not an easy process to practice. But when we wait on His time, patience is engaged. And even more than that, if we are trustworthy, we can also diffuse some situations where there's little patience. Proverbs 25, verse 15, with patience a ruler may be persuaded and a soft tongue will break a bone. But when our trust in God wanes, typically our patience also in general wanes. When we remember that God is in control, we come back around to this attitude of patience. Because we know it's not up to us in the end. And this is brought out in James 1. Verses that are very well known, perhaps. James 1, verse 2. My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. But let patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect, complete, lacking nothing. And then it talks about asking for wisdom from God. Let him ask in faith, with no doubting, for he who doubts is like a wave of the sea, tossed and driven by the wind. A double-minded man, unstable in all his ways. Just think of the sea breeze. It's nice to watch, but you don't want to be knocked about by a wave. As a wave moves around, there's no foundation. And, you know, trust, faith is most certainly a foundation for patience and endurance. Especially when we have some more difficult trials upon us. And I don't pretend to have endured super difficult trials. But you know, that trust that is real is born out in a development of patience. It's not an instant thing, is it? It's something we have to practice. Like anything worth having. It's not an instant result of saying, yes, I believe, and then therefore all of a sudden we're patient people. But a consistent sequence of trials and patient enduring. We could talk about Ahab, but I don't think I will because we don't have too much time. I'll summarize Ahab. He's kind of an opposite of Jeremiah. A lack of trust meant a lack of development of patience or and consistent failure when he faced trials. His trust really was with Jezebel to fix things for him. And that wasn't an end that had any hope. And from the end of 1 Kings 16, where our reading finds us today, we're told where his trust lay. In verse 31, it says, and it came to pass, as though it had been a trivial thing for him to walk in the sins of Jeroboam, son of Nebat, that he took as a wife Jezebel, the daughter of Ethbaal, king of the Sidonians. He went and served Baal and worshipped him. Then he set up an altar for Baal in the temple of Baal, which had been built in Samaria, and Ahab made a wooden image. Ahab did more to provoke the Lord God of Israel to anger than all the kings of Israel who were before him. Imagine that being said of you. Jeroboam, son of Nebat, who made Israel to sin, well, nothing next to Ahab. In the incident with Naboth and his vineyard, we haven't got there yet in our readings, Ahab couldn't wait, had no patience for what he believed, to own what he believed was his, or should be his. He wanted Naboth's vineyard so bad, and he did nothing to stop Jezebel from murdering for it. He knew his wife. He knew Jezebel. He knew that she would take things into her hands, deal with it, and bring him what he wanted. And yet, even Ahab had second chances, didn't he? In 1 Kings 22, near the end of that chapter, we see he humbles himself in sackcloth and ashes, and so he's told through Elijah, because he's humbled himself before me, I will not bring disaster in his days, but in his son's days, I will bring disaster on his house. But it didn't change Ahab. His trust still wasn't in God, because we know when Jehoshaphat, when he brought Jehoshaphat in to fight his wars for him and go out there and dress up as king and him as a commoner, if you remember that one, that was his last battle against Ramoth-Gilead, and he wanted to take the city. And Jehoshaphat asks for a prophet of the Lord because Ahab has all these other prophets around him. How many were there? I think there were 400 men saying to Ahab, go, you will prevail. Isn't that what we do? We surround ourselves with those who tell us that what we're doing is the right thing, the good thing. But we have to listen in the end to the one who gives us the truth through his word. But Ahab knew that. Ahab knew that this wasn't the truth. But it was the truth he wanted to hear, and that's what he was going to listen to. So that was good for him. Jehoshaphat, no, he wanted someone who was a prophet of the Lord, and so they brought Micaiah, and when Jehoshaphat asked of who he could inquire of, the response of Ahab was stunning, really. He had humbled himself, but he didn't trust in God. His response was this: there is yet one man by whom we may inquire of the Lord, Micaiah, son of Imlah, but I hate him, for he never prophesies good concerning me, but evil. So Ahab expected his own answers, and he found people to provide them for him. He was in battle. He was killed, as was prophesied by Micaiah, and his blood was licked up by the dogs, as prophesied by Elijah, after the murder of Naboth. How was this different then from someone like David, who also murdered? David was impatient. He was overtaken by his own human impulses for Bathsheba. He knowingly had Uriah killed, Bathsheba's husband. But his trust in God meant something different would follow. And consider, what would we think if one of our rulers, the premier, the prime minister, committed some offense like murder? We know they're a murderer, and yet David remains in power. But there are consequences. His trust in God meant that he listened to Nathan the prophet. Elijah didn't have Ahab's ear, but David listened to Nathan. He accepted his sin. He accepted the consequences. Ahab only performed a humbling act and then continued his pattern of distrust. David waited patiently for God's answer, and his first child with Bathsheba died. He accepted it. He waited patiently for God's mercy and forgiveness because he knew that God's grace brought hope. By God's grace, there was hope. And that brings us to Christ and his resurrection, which we read about in the last chapter of Mark today. The culmination of perfect patience, rooted in enduring, absolute trust in God, his Father. And although our patience is not and never will be perfect in this life, if it is developing, like David's, we too have the same hope of resurrection. And we have each other to help stay the course. In Philippians 2, Paul encourages us. He says, "Do all things without murmurings and disputings, that ye may be blameless and harmless, the sons of God, without rebuke, in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, among whom ye shine as lights in the world, holding forth the word of life, that I may rejoice in the day of Christ, that I have not run in vain, nor neither labored in vain." So the more patience that we practice with each other, do all things without murmurings and disputings, where we hold in common this trust, this underlying trust in God, the more we will also endure patiently together. As we are faced with trials in our lives and from without, as we try to shine as lights in this world. Jesus was challenged daily in his world, and yet always had the time and the patience with others. Just think of Judas. We've been reading about the end of his ministry and Judas, who he chose from the beginning because he knew this man was one of the 12, would be one of the 12. He knew he'd betray him from the beginning. We don't know these kinds of things. And yet he knew. And still, how did he treat Judas? Differently from all the rest? Didn't teach him anything? Shunned him? No, he was like one of his disciples. And he loved him. And he wanted him, even despite his betrayal, to repent. You know, Peter also betrayed Christ. Not in the same way. We also deny. When we are not trusting. Imagine knowing someone who would betray you, and yet you'd spend 3 years teaching him wholeheartedly. In Mark 10, Jesus says, "Let the children come to me." And then we have blind Bartimaeus in that same chapter, and this man is yelling out, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me." He doesn't say, "Oh, go be quiet." But that's what everyone else was saying, so he could have gone with the crowd. Instead, he takes those same people that are telling him to be quiet, he tells them, "Go get him for me." And so then they have to use patience, where they were impatient with this man. trust in patience that allows us to see just a little bit better, like blind Bartimaeus was made to see. Jesus is bombarded through all this questioning from the leaders meant to trap him personally. And he highlights the folly of human-motivated thinking when the Sadducees question him about the resurrection and the power of the resurrection and whether it's really something that exists. Well, the Sadducees didn't believe in the resurrection. Again, we look long and hard for some logic, any logic that can provide us what we want. The logic the Sadducees came up with was a woman who was married to a brother, not her brother, married to someone who had six other brothers. There were seven brothers. The first dies. And we know how the story proceeds. Each brother dies, and she's married to each of them in sequence until they're all gone, and she's only left, and whose husband, and who will she be married to in the kingdom age? And the answer is no one, for we're not married or given in marriage. But the Sadducees figured they had Christ here. You know, in our impatience, our logic is flawed. In our lack of trust, we lose sight of God's point of view. We whip out an answer as we feel that we're losing our control, reacting in fear, but we can pause, wait, and remember. And this is what we remember. Control is always in God's hands. Patience and trust. Pause, wait, remember. Jesus' authority was challenged, but his answer comes as a product of this trust that he fostered in God, and all related to his resurrection, because that was the certainty of his hope. In Jesus' 33 years on this earth as a mortal human being, he heard God perfectly. He didn't balk. He didn't argue. He trusted. Never once denied God's answer. Not once. He never said, well, no, that can't be right. I'm just not ready to accept this is my lot in life. I want some more comfortable living. There must be something else. I've found a better way where I can combine my desires with your will. No. He listened, he heard, and he followed. And that's what we remind ourselves of today. Do we hear when God speaks to us? Do we listen to such words as 1 Corinthians 6:12? All things are lawful for me, but not all things are helpful. All things are lawful for me, but I will not be enslaved by anything. And we already read, as Paul puts it, that we might run this race with patience. And patience is trust. And trust is in our God. And it's at his pace, not our own. In patience, trusting that he works in us in both mercy and grace, being shown that the very fact, being shown that very fact by how our Lord Jesus ran with patience in trust. You know, we started off talking about the circumstances that might try our patience. We don't want to throw ourselves into circumstances that try our patience, do we? We don't want to just go headlong into something that's difficult and try to endure. It's difficult, so we avoid it. But this is what Mark 13 tells us, verse 13, "And you will be hated by all for my name's sake, but the one who endures to the end will be saved." Let's show patience, because it's a proof of our trust and faith. And I say that knowing that I need to develop it. I'm sure that you do. Because each of us is challenged. Now, we're challenged in different ways. For some of us, it's obvious. Others of us, we might think we're patient, or we've been patient, and then, well, now we found a circumstance where we know we're not. And that's how we're tried, and that's how we're molded. Let's show it in the small stuff every day, with our coworkers, our friends, our teachers, our students, our employers, our children, clients, nieces, nephews, grandchildren, fathers, mothers, grandfathers, grandmothers, neighbors, especially though with each other. Brothers and sisters in one marvelous hope. Practicing our trust in God with patience so that it allows us to be molded and developed by Him. Not perfect, but aimed that way by God's grace. Because God raised the Lord and will also raise us up in His power, 1 Corinthians 6:14. Patience and trust. Pause, wait, remember. Remember, control is, was, and always will be in God's hands.